Jennifer Ruth, thanks for joining me today on the Old Mole to follow up on your August report, where you talk about the intensifying repression of pro-Palestine speech and activism on college campuses. Welcome again to KABU and the Old Mole.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to talk about some of the findings you report in your academe article this fall titled When the Law is Lawless. But let's start with some of the history throughout 2024 as pro-Palestine campus protests spread across the U.S. The House Committee on Education and the Workforce brought university presidents before the committee in hearings described by many as the new McCarthyism. The committee issued numerous reports claiming evidence of universities' unwillingness to fulfill their legal obligation under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act and their failure to address what they claimed was a quote, explosion of anti-Semitic conduct on their campuses. These hearings drew on what a broad range of legal scholars describe as dubious definitions and trumped-up testimony, where criticism of Israel and Zionism were defined as forms of anti-Semitism. So that was 2024. How much of what has happened under the new Trump regime is a continuation of these Republican-led efforts that had also had the support of Democratic leadership under Biden?
The Biden years set up the Trump administration extremely well for the crackdown on higher education that we've been witnessing since January inauguration. So the attempt to control higher education through the revoking or suspension of federal funding, because the bipartisan sort of complicity in the narratives that were developed in those years put universities under some sort of notice and intimidated them. So when the federal agencies, the Department of Justice, the Department of Education, Office for Civil Rights, the multi-agency task force that Trump announced soon after he was inaugurated that was going to look into widespread anti-Semitic harassment on campuses that first targeted five universities, but then later it was 60. The ability to do that was already set in place during the Biden years. And so it has enabled the Trump administration to really crush academic freedom at colleges and universities. And we've been witnessing a seemingly complete failure to fight back and capitulation by higher ed administrators and boards of trustees to this, in large part because they're so desperate to restore funding. So whether they agree, a lot of the settlements, the universities don't admit that they were, as the Trump administration claims, deliberately indifferent to anti-Semitism. They don't say that that's true, but they nonetheless settle and agree to certain demands so that they can restore funding for the sciences predominantly.
Can you say a little bit about Title VI that actually began to be the basis of even legal cases in 2024, criminalizing criticism of Zionism as a protected category under the civil rights law? Many people aren't familiar with Title VI, I think more familiar with Title IX, that was so much part of campus life and confronting sexual discrimination in sports and other areas of academic life. Title VI has now taken center stage in these so-called crackdowns on anti-Semitism on campuses.
Yeah, so Title VI itself speaks to shared ancestry, ethnicity, race, national origin. It doesn't speak to religion, but there was a long campaign starting about 20 years ago for certain groups, certain pro-Israel groups, trying to get the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition adopted by the State Department, the Department of Education. There's a narrative about so-called the new anti-Semitism, which was circulating among many different groups, Jewish federations, different lobbying and advocacy groups, and the new anti-Semitism and the IRA definition combined create a lot of confusion around what is anti-Semitism and try to differentiate anti-Semitism from other forms of racism. Title VI doesn't speak to Jewish ancestry in particular, or Jewish ethnicity, or Jewish religion, But nonetheless, these different campaigns have tried to make it feel very complicated to assess anti-Semitism and open the door to crushing speech that is should be protected by the First Amendment. That is, in fact, the reason why we have the First Amendment, for political speech that's critical of a nation state, critical of Israel. And yeah, so these attempts, and it began in earnest with Kenneth Marcus under the first Trump administration, where he encouraged all investigators in the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights to adopt the IRA definition. So one of the things that the settlements are doing, that the Trump administration is doing, is forcing universities to adopt the IRA definition, which one of its writers, Kenneth Stern, has been wherever he can sounding the alarm that this is not was not meant to be used in cases, Title VI cases against students on campuses. This was meant to be a kind of general guideline as people try to report things internationally. So he's against what's happening, one of the actual signatories and writers of the IRA definition. But that was one of the ways that Title VI can be used in inappropriate ways to crush academic freedom and free speech, that by settled civil rights interpretation and by many scholars' interpretations should not be considered anti-Semitism.
Seems like one distinction that I've noticed between the Biden era and the Trump regime is under Biden, there were a number of lofty proclamations around fighting the scourge of anti-Semitism and, kind of exaggerated claims of its dominance on campuses and elsewhere. But combining that with struggles against racism and other forms of historically recognized oppression protected under the civil rights law. What now we're seeing, what I think is the case under this new Trump regime, is they've basically abandoned investigations around racism, BIPOC communities, prejudice against Muslims, queer people, and this charge of anti-Semitism is pretty much driving the whole truck there.
So I think it's really important for people to understand what's going on in the federal civil service that enables exactly what you're describing. There's a really great report that hopefully we can link to in the description of this episode from the American Association of University Professors in coalition with the Middle East Studies Association called Discriminating Against Dissent: The Weaponization of Civil Rights Law to Repress Campus Speech on Palestine. So that report makes this case, and we're seeing this case that the Palestine exception is no longer an exception. It's now the model for how to go after what would have in the past been considered appropriate programs around African American history, LGBTQ identity, psychology of gender, transgender rights. These kinds of things that are now under part of the Trump's agenda to stamp out wokeism. There's a woman named Harmeet Dillon who is now the Assistant Attorney General, and she's head of the Office for Civil Rights for the Education Department. And back in 2017, she tweeted, "Woke is the new anti-Semitism." So this attempt to sort of combine wokeness and, condemn it, exaggerate it, act like woke itself is a form of discrimination against, ultimately against white people, Christian people, straight people, and Jewish people. So what you see, well, this is the part about the civil service that I would like people to understand. And if it actually it's not hard to understand. The Sunday Magazine just this past Sunday had an article about the DOJ's civil
The New
and
York Times.
the New York Times Magazine, and it was called, the quote of the front page was, "The DOJ is Trump's personal law firm now." And it looked at all of the people who have left, been fired, all of the civil rights attorneys who worked under settled civil rights interpretations in the past. Have they left, been fired, and some of whom have stayed on but are speaking off record about the degree to which cases that would have gone forward under settled civil rights law about discrimination against racial minorities have been stopped, dismissed. And the few civil rights attorneys that remain, or the new ones that have been hired, under new rules that make them much more subservient and much more like political appointees than like the old school civil rights attorneys who had protections and some degree of ability to make independent judgments. The new ones are pursuing anti-Christian, anti-white, anti-Semitism, all of these things. So the sad thing, of course, is that anti-Semitism is a form of racism and it was protected under Title VI, but it became the kind of street drug that could open access to attacking all of these other things that the administration considers discrimination, illegal, not in its interests.
Well, and perversely and ironically, anti-Semitism in its more traditional organized forms as an ideology with all the tropes associated with it are most dominant in the right wing, including
Right.
in the Trump regime and their circles. And they're actually debating how to deal with Nick Fuentes and Charlie Kirk, all of these right-wing influencers who are themselves explicitly Holocaust deniers, making a lot of claims about Jewish conspiracy. And there's virtually no crackdown in the right on that organized form of anti-Semitism. Instead, there's a focus on discomfort some Jewish students feel on campus when they're confronted with pro-Palestinian speech or demonstrations. And of course, campuses are supposed to be places of discomfort where you have to enlarge your world by understanding what's happening and coming to terms with people that you're complicit in their suffering. And all of that has been shut down with this single-minded focus on a right-wing assault on all of the developments that came out of social movements, the social justice campaigns throughout our history, including how they've created a much more vibrant world in academia than the one I came into in 1980. So there's a tragic loss there and irony to all of these campaigns. What do you see happening, like at Portland State University, looking locally at our own university, where there were considerable protests and the President Cudd had to acknowledge the claims of students around calling for boycott of Boeing and its complicity in Israel and the military support for Israel. What is happening now at PSU?
So you were speaking just a second ago about discomfort having such an exaggeratedly powerful role in policing speech and freedom of assembly and all of these things, even though most of us understand and agree that higher education is a place where some degree of discomfort is productive and generative of thinking through issues and is necessary. So if I can speak to that for a second, I mean, and it also ties into the idea that the gaslighting that we have been subject to for a decade, if not 15 years now, of so-called left authoritarianism that then deflects from and becomes the sort of screen to protect right authoritarianism and right-wing anti-Semitism. So the idea that the left has become so dominant on campuses that it is silencing speech. The reality is that there are only certain groups that are being disciplined and investigated and terminated or suspended or expelled or fined for their speech. And that is people on the left, not people on the right or people who are defending Israel or talking about Hamas's victims. It's people talking about the Palestinian victims criticizing Israel. Those are the people who are actually losing their jobs, not getting renewed, their contracts renewed, getting suspended, expelled, etc. So what's happening at PSU is very much along those lines. And so to give you an example, there is a tenured faculty member who's under investigation right now because of speech that happened off campus, unrelated to her teaching, unrelated to PSU. There was no affiliation with PSU, but it was speech that one of these organizations, these very, very strident pro-Israel organizations, look for and then clip and doctor in some way, manipulate, and then try to stoke outrage against anti-Semitism and strip situations of context. In higher education, we have to be about context. any kind of sound bite is not nuanced, it's not complex, it's not contextualized, it can be easily taken out of context. We know this. So what we see in Title VI investigations of faculty members is that there's a real rush to judgment and a desire to appease by administrators and boards of trustees to appease people who complain. Often very in very organized letter writing campaigns, complain about someone. There's a rush to judgment. There's not due process. There's no longer a sense that just what someone subjectively feels is not enough, that investigators do need to go beyond and see what a reasonable party, this is what the law says, a reason, they have to go beyond the subjective experience of the complainant and move towards something more objective and supposedly neutral and impartial that looks at what a reasonable person would feel. There's a real desire because of the incredible stress and strain of the federal investigations on anti-Semitism and the narrative that has been perpetuated, real desire to sort of forego the actual due process of these investigations or to choose to let incidents that otherwise would have been dismissed and wouldn't have been raised to the bar of an investigation, but to investigate them. So we see that public pressure, public certain groups, certain powerful groups, both in the community but also politically in the federal administration, are exerting enormous pressure on institutions to not follow their own procedures and to sort of appease by disciplining people that really they have no business disciplining. So that is definitely happening. And the only reason why the tenured faculty, why we still have a case here, is precisely because she is tenured and represented by a union. Staff who can be fired without cause and for no reason and can be gone in 2 weeks by their employment contracts have no such protections. So if someone complains that they've something a staff person said made them feel uncomfortable, there's no due process at all. There's no investigation to whether the staff member was actually trying to do something thoughtful, helpful, whether the discomfort was something that's a reasonable amount of discomfort in the higher education setting. There's none of that. People are just fired. In fact, at PSU, to bring it back to the local, we have a tenured faculty member under investigation wrongly. Her free speech rights should have protected entirely and it should never be investigated. And we also have had a staff member, if not more, and one that I know of, who was terminated without any kind of due process
In the
whatsoever.
Women's Resource Center.
But the director of the Women's Resource Center, and we're going to put a link. I know I've asked Jan to put a link to an interview that Nick did with the Center for Defense of Academic Freedom about their case. So they were terminated without any kind of due process. So any kind of day in court, any kind of contextualization, these things are because of the extreme fear, which is not to excuse it. People need to act with integrity regardless of public pressure and federal pressure. These injustices are happening, including to students who are getting suspended or fined for things without proper investigation. And I do want to add that the improper investigations or lack of investigations, I can't say. I think the investigation as a whole and the tenured faculty member is improper itself. I'm not saying that the investigation as it's happening is not following procedures, but I am saying that people without those protections are getting terminated without any kind of due process. And then I do want to mention too that the civil service itself, the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, the Education Department Office for Civil Rights, they are not following. When they launch Title VI investigations against campuses, they're not following proper procedures and protocols. But the extreme fear is nonetheless prompting universities and the desire to restore funding quickly is nonetheless, universities know this, that the investigations are not being done properly, but they're settling anyway to get the funding restored.
Well, there are these interesting shifts, though, including in the tactics. You don't see the encampments this year, but there are other, I think, very localized, small acts of resistance and subversion of what people are increasingly recognizing as a form of fascism, a form of authoritarianism in this country, where the legitimacy of the state and the actions of the state and the legal system as an instrument of the Trump regime are laid bare as well. And so there, the first set of settlements were so sickening with university administrators, where they were all falling in line in the spring to sign on to these agreements to restore funding and often didn't get that much in return. But this more recent attempt that the Trump administration unfurled this compact with universities to sign on to all of these measures to monitor curricula, all across the board, that just would make any claim of academic independence or integrity a sham. There many universities did not sign on to that. And I think there has been this shift, although the picture is still very dark and bleak. But I think there's also, it's clear what's going on. And I think also the relationship between these different forms of oppression and the struggles of groups that have a lot in common with the Palestinian cause. Do you want to say anything in closing about what gives you hope in these hard times? I mean, their AUP is doing a lot on the legal front. There are a lot of resource materials for fighting back, for understanding what's happening, alternative curricula materials. Is there anything that gives
Yes,
you hope?
I would just mention too, the Northwestern University just settled. So it's not just the settlements are ongoing, not just from the spring. And theirs was particularly devastating. They agreed, for example, to terminate what was called the Deering Meadow Agreement of April 2024, which was what the students had accomplished in getting them to agree to in terms of opening the door to scrutinizing the investments of the university. So the administration had agreed to this and then decided that it was more important to settle with the Trump administration and to abnegate the agreement that they had made. So their agreement, their word means nothing. So those things are really disturbing. The compact is it's great that so many universities have already said, can't do it. This is the end of academic freedom. So yeah, I do find that hopeful. What I find even more hopeful is the numbers, the articles and stories that are starting to come out that expose how clownish and improper and shallow the whole assaults are, the fascistic and authoritarian assault on higher education. So I really recommend, in the summer, I wrote a piece for Mondo Weiss where I really called upon equity and compliance investigators at their universities to hold to settled and established civil rights interpretations of law, regardless of what their president or boards of trustees, regardless of whether it even meant that they might get fired because they're not appeasing these outside forces as quickly, or they're not having findings that appease the outside forces. And I think as more and more comes out that exposes that going along with this regime means that you have zero integrity, I think we're going to see more and more heroic people who've quit, like who are covered in the New York Times Magazine article, who quit and then start talking about what's going on inside the administration. And that will prompt people at all levels, both in the administration and the heads of universities, to begin to act with more courage.
Well, that's a good place to end and a hopeful note. And we'll have to have you back in early 2026 to follow up on these reports.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Jennifer Ruth, for being with us on the Omol today.
The bullies are pouring and hoarding resources, repeating old phrases like courses for horses, and there's no there.